Today's topic is frequency comps, and this team is consisted by me and Pamela Velasquez. I'm not present here. And also that he, unfortunately, he's not here, but she recorded that part and she's going to be the one first with the introduction.
Hello, I'm Terry, and I'm going to give you a brief introduction of frequency comps and tell a little bit about their history. And I have some technical issues, so this will not be on full screen, but I think that's okay. So frequency comps, and in more specific, optical frequency comps are laser sources with a spectrum of narrow line, even space, and phase coherent laser lines. In 1970, they were classified as modular lasers. And what are modular lasers? Well, mode locking is a technique where you lock multiple axial modes in the laser cavity, and the constructive interference between the modes cause the light to be produced in pulses with high duration. In the same year, a first application of frequency comps was invented, and it was frequency comb spectroscopy. 8 years later, Eckstein, Ferguson, and Hansch discovered that ultrasound laser pulses can connect microwave frequency and optical frequency with the help of a comb line. And comb line is formed from the longitudinal mode of the laser, and that enables measuring, counting, and controlling optical frequencies for the very first time. But this was just in theory. The optical frequency comps were very unstable, and the transition from conventional to lock lasers required from shorter pulses to reach a wide enough frequency spectrum and locking frequency, which provides higher stability. In 1991, a laser called titanium sapphire parallel femtosecond mode lock pulse laser provided shorter pulses and wide frequency spectrum. But there was still this another problem, which was solved almost 10 years later when it was discovered that with the heterodyne system, where the two signal frequencies are combined, a laser could be controlled, making the frequencies more stable and the frequency locking stable. And this fully stabilized the optical frequency cones.
So what are the optical frequency cones, right? They are a high precision laser that act like a ruler for light. So they measure exact frequencies of light at which colors exist, and they go from the invisible infrared and ultraviolet to the visible red, yellow, green that we see in the spectrum of light. And they do it quite quickly and accurately also. But how are they generated? Basically, when a laser produces a frequency comp, it emits a wave of light that repeats itself periodically in time. So unlike conventional lasers, which we know emit only one single frequency, these lasers emit multiple frequencies in lockstep using a technique that's called mode locking, that basically allows the laser to be able to produce these pulses, like very short pulses of light, of extremely short duration and with equal spacing between them. And this order, like the duration of them, goes from picoseconds to femtoseconds. So it's very, very short amount of time. And here in this graphic, we can see a very simple example. There's no specific units to it, because in reality, as I said, that time that it occurs is very, very small. We're talking like very small fractions of a second. But this is like to help us see how the different colors of the light, of the wavelengths oscillate over time. So we see here, we can see that the blue one, it's much faster than the other colors of light, but let's focus on the blue one and the red one, which we can say that the red one is the slower one because it has like least peaks here. It's only two, and we can see that the blue one is 1, 2, 3, 4, and it repeats a lot more, right? So we will say that this is a much faster wave of light. And here there is a more simplified graphic, but this is actually the representation of the optical cones. Here, there we can see actually the tooth of the cones with different colors. And as in this graphic, the blue light, the blue wavelength, sorry, which is the faster, is represented on the right part of the spectrum, and the red one, which is we could say the slower one, it's represented on the red side of the spectrum. But if that was too complicated to understand, let's think about optical frequency pumps as a normal laser, but with a twisted, you know? So a normal laser, as I said, only has a single frequency of one color. And the difference with the optical pump, with the optical frequency is this. Instead of only just one, can I use the chalkboard? Okay. So in the spectrum, sorry. Instead of like being a normal laser, which is only one light color and only one frequency, which is a very narrow like frequency range, honestly. Instead of that, the optical frequency comes with the mode locking technique, which it does is not only one frequency, yes, not only one, but multiple of them, right? So it repeats itself multiple times, and it's equally spaced in a really short duration of time. And this is why it also gets its name, because it resembles the tooth of a normal brush hair or a comb. So that's basically it. I hope you understood that.
So let's get more to the physics side of it. So here is in the upper corner, the frequency comb is presented in time domain. So the dashed lines are envelopes, and the blue are the carrier where the frequencies are, and the time between pulses is one per repetition frequency, which is also the frequency gap between the colors or modes you are using. And then there's the phase shift that the pulse has, which is for the carrier and envelopes. Big difference. And the electromagnetic waves are only present in the inside the envelope. And to get from this time domain, the Fourier transform is done. So to get the frequency domain where the comb is, so then the for one kind of frequency, there is function that is the frequency of the lines which are formed from repetition frequency and the carrier envelope offset frequency, which is connected to the phase shift with this kind of function where and there is in the second picture is very simplified use of frequency comps as in spectrometry, where the frequency comp interacts with the sample. It excites the sample, and the transformed frequency is then analyzed in the spectrometer.
So, frequency comps are applied to laser-based metrology or sensing systems. One of the motivations of developing combs was to measure the optical clocks, as frequency combs act as a bridge connecting the optical waves to the microwave domain. Most of the applications are still in development and new ones are emerging, but different types of frequency combs are applicable in optical waveform generation and high harmonics generation and spectroscopy and distance measurements. And astrocombs can be used in the hunt of exoplanets, and if the accuracy is good enough, they can even be used to test fundamental physics. And what I mean by different types of cones is that their applications have different requirements for the cone. For example, the optical clock needs cones that are very well phase locked and stable systems that a particular cone teeth. And in the molecular spectroscopy, for example, you want a broad spectrum of the comb, but the stability doesn't need to be that good. What is common for all of these applications is that they use the combs as a ruler in either the time domain or in the frequency domain. And I will further discuss three applications in more detail. So the combs can be used to look for exoplanets. And you're looking for tiny Doppler shifts in the light of a star. The shifts are caused by the gravitational wobble of the star, which is caused by the orbiting planets. And so the telescope collects the light from the star, which goes to the high quality spectrograph. And you measure the spectrum of the star. And at the same time, you have a frequency comb that is referenced to an absolute time standard. And it produces the comb teeth that can be literally used as a ruler to look for, to measure the spectrum of this star. And you look in time, you look for the tiny shifts that indicate the presence of exoplanets. So dual combs can be used in gas sensing, for example, finding out the local concentration of the greenhouse gases in the air. First of all, frequency combs are wanted as a source for spectroscopy because they offer broad spectral bandwidth, which is good for covering more different molecular detection. They also have high spatial coherence, which allows for longer interrogation paths and higher sensitivity. And they also offer high frequency resolution and accuracy. So in the system, there's two combs that are phase locked to each other so that one comb tooth of each comb is overlapping. So the first one there. And the combs have slightly different repetition rates. So that when we beat these combs against each other, the other comb is gonna walk off the other. The resulting frequency spectrum is in the radio frequency domain that can be directly measured by the digital electronics. The repetition rate of the teeth of the resulting comb is the differences in the optical frequencies of the two combs. So this one is the difference of this blue and red one. And if the bandwidths are limited appropriately, there is one-to-one mapping. So you know that the first comb tooth of the new comb came from the first pair of teeth and second from the second and so forth. So the frequencies are mapped from the optical to the radio frequencies. And if you put gas sample in the pathway of one of the combs here, you get a dip in the spectrum caused by gas absorption, which shows also in the radio frequency spectrum. The physical principle of the dual comb system is the same as the of this one comb system that uses moving mirror, except that the down conversion to this new spectrum does not depend on the speed of the moving parts, which is the mirror here. So the dual comb approach is faster, and it also allows using both amplitude and phase information. And the phase information is good for if the environment is turbulent or noisy. The real world experiments use near infrared frequency combs, but extending the advantages of this dual comb system if you want to extend it to a broader range of molecular detection, you require comb sources that are in the mid infrared region. So all clocks work by counting and oscillating events with recognized frequency. The traditional atomic clock uses oscillation of the cesium atom, which has frequency in the microwave area of the electromagnetic spectrum. And optical clocks operate in the way comparable to microwave clocks, but they use atoms or ions that oscillate approximately 100,000 times higher than microwave frequencies, which is in the visible portion of the electromagnetic spectrum. And these higher frequencies mean that the optical clock ticks more rapidly than the atomic clock, and this results in the higher precision and stability over time. So the accuracy of the optical clock is several orders of magnitude higher, providing timing accuracy with 18 digits or higher to the atomic clock's 16 digits. And I want to clarify one thing from the report. I wrote the comparison sentence there, but forgot the comparison from there. So I only talk about this one when I, right next to it, wanted to talk about this one, but only this is mentioned. So remember that the accuracy is 18 digits or more with optical clocks. And to put these numbers into perspective, the atomic clock deviates about 100 seconds per time, the time of the universe. And in the same time, optical clock deviates only 1 second. And it could be improved even beyond that. The clock laser here. The clock laser frequency is compared to an optical transition frequency of a selected atom or ion, and corrected using an optical frequency corrector. So this. The output of the corrector is the optical clock output signal, which is locked to a cavity and to the atom or ion to keep the output frequency in check. And the third key element of optical clocks offers the accurate measuring of the frequency of the output, which is this frequency comb. And this translates, the comb translates the optical frequency to a measurable radio frequency from where the clock's frequency can be calculated. And since this is way more accurate, this could affect, for example, the GPS system and other satellite-based navigation systems to offer even more accurate location data in order of centimeters, so that in the future, the navigation systems in cars could recognize which lane you are driving in and whether you need to change the lane to get where you are going. But despite the fact that this is accurate, it is almost exclusively operated in meteorological facilities or universities due to the bulk component sizes and the complexity compared to the atomic clock.
This is
the reference picture. It's resembling spectrum.
Yeah.
With the tiny cap.
Yeah. One frequency is taking off.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Well done.
One more question about the optical clock surface. I mean, for this one, I don't know about it. But you said that it can be used for navigation. So is it already used, and what are the
The optical clock is not used because these atomic clocks are in broader use because this is more accurate, but it's still in the development. So universities and some clock facilities use it, but this is the current thing that keeps our time.
Doesn't have any
cover. Not yet, I think. At least that's what I understood. Because all of these comb spectroscopy things are fairly new. So they are the applications are in their infancy.
And what about with the satellite clocks? What are the other applications?
Well, you can use it. What's the thing? Well, timekeeping in general. Everything that you need a clock. For example, this thing is used with the clock as a reference.
So the definition of meter is defined by the satellite clock.
Yeah, it's
how it measures the distance and time that it goes by or to moon and back or something like this.
No, it's nowadays defined as what the distance of light goes in a certain time. Yeah. And you can have a very short time.
Yeah.
Light travel from meter. So
yeah, but that's the definition of meter.
Yeah, and it's basically the definition of a time. So every clock needs to be compared to time. Some clock needs to be the accurate
clock.
Because everything else is compared.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it starts to drift. And
yeah.
After 10 years, 1 second is 5 times longer than an hour.
Yeah. Yeah, rather basic question because I know you about me, but I did not quite get how you really create this frequency comes. So how do you get interact with your laser frequencies instead of this being one? And if you go, yeah, maybe there's one more to start to you have one back, this one here, I think, or about the next one.
You can't, correct?
what was the question? Sorry? How are they?
Yeah, how are they? As you mentioned, the normal laser is just one frequency.
Yeah, that's why you use a new technique when you are. Normal lasers only get one frequency, right? But it's not very accurate measurement. It's like you get a very narrow range of frequencies that you can actually like measure. So in order for you to like have a wider range, and you can use this as a ruler, as it says, to measure other like color frequencies and stuff, you use this technique, the smoke blocking, which enables the laser to do different positions, basically.
I think the question was more like, why is it allowed?
Yeah.
How the smoke blocking operates on the
laser. I think it was more in the air.
So the laser, the phase shift. I mean the laser by changing the phase shift, the different frequencies are generated by in the laser.
I think you said it one point, you said it's a Fourier transform.
Yeah.
So you need a couple of lenses. You take a Fourier transform from time domain to frequency domain, and that generates the peaks.
Yeah.
Because you have this difference in the time domain.
I was also
telling
adjust
to
the intensity of the one frequency
of one. Yeah, the thing is that it's called the different material have a different. Well, this is a non-linear phenomenon. I must admit that I think I need to check out myself and also what means mode blocking. We are using mode block lasers there all the time, these femtosecond lasers, where we have a broad path because it's very short.
Mm-hmm.
But this doesn't need ultra short pulses when you create a frequency code. You need certain type of non-linear material. And I was thinking that we needed two lasers to get this frequency pattern, but I have to learn myself as a matter of fact a bit more. But you need a material where the nonlinear effect happens, kind of magic happens. Yes. And then you're controlling so that you get this phase shift in a way or another. But I have to also learn to check that a bit more carefully. Actually, I had a question in this slide. So I was kind of wondering, and you kind of explained, but what's the benefit of having this frequency code? If we look at the picture here down, that we have frequency,
then
and then everyone has the same. Then you have a frequency like this, and then you have your sample, and then you have a frequency which are absorbed. So much easier to take a white light there, and then it absorbs the light, and then you measure with the spectrometer. What is now exactly the benefit of the whole thing? Because you can have a white light and you have all your frequencies, and then you put it in the spectrometer and you can split the light to the each wavelength, meaning each frequency, and then you can measure a spectrum.
And you get exactly the same spectrum.
And you get the spectrum like you would draw there. Yeah. So where is the B?
Why this is better?
You're missing the wavelength. Right.
Yeah, because you have
only here and there.
Yeah, okay, but they are very so in the mid infrared it's just a one wave number. You can make a frequency call. I can tell already that we are considering or we are considering to buy a device which uses this frequency comms for FTIR for IR spectroscopy. It resembles the FTIR spectroscopy. And it has a bit, the difference is one wave number, you can see it. It's quite expensive to use it. I can tell you why, but my problem here is at the moment, I kind of know answers in my case, but what in this picture is the bridge that why it is better than using just a normal white light because you have all frequencies in the white light.
I don't really have a great idea, but my guess is this can be more accurate and narrowed down to a smaller than like a normal light.
Okay, so that in terms of spectrum, so one line from another, or spectral resolution.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I know myself is that they are also, you can use it. I mean, when we can go that through when we go in my lecture, we can think about how FTIR spectrometer works. You have it also the interferometer there. And then you have white light, and then you measure interferogram. It takes time to scan that all. But when we have this kind of frequency comp, I understood that you don't have to scan anything. You just get the all frequencies in a controlled manner. And when you do this in time domain, so that you want to, for example, measure where we were interested in that we can measure it with the less pulses, so you get a better signal because each of them are laser light. So each of these is laser light. So you have much, much more higher intensity of light than from the infrared white light bulb. But they are also in each spectral position. And in that way, you can measure with the one shot, you get the spectrum every time, and you get the real spectrum right away. You can do it very, because it's the same information that we are detecting in 1 hour to integrate the signal, it just makes one shot. So it's there.
Oh, a second.
Yeah. And then you can measure, for example, the time evolution of a signal with a very short time period, like minute or two or something, where you normally you need an hour, and then there are measurements that we were measuring 1 day, it would reduce in an hour or something. If each of them are laser light, so that's why it becomes so much more brighter, so much more light per.
Also, you get the phase information, which you don't get from a white light.
Yes, okay. But I don't care about phase, but maybe you.
in the material science, you care. Because if you want to calculate your refractive index or dielectric constant, as you know, we have, in general, you discuss them as a numbers, real numbers, but they have also imaginary part. And this imaginary part you can measure if you have no other phase difference. Sure. So also how much it's decreased, that tells a real part, and then imaginary part is how much it delayed the phase.
Yeah.
So that's another advantage. It was mentioned in one slide. I think it was this exoplanet.
Yeah.
There you measure the phase. Exactly. I'm sorry about this. Our example went quite far from a nano science.
Wow. Like exoplanet is really nice.
Yeah. Because next time I know to formulate the topic a little bit. Because I have myself heard about this, the use of frequency comms a lot in a nanoscience application, and I put it as a topic because it also got a Nobel Prize a few years ago as a very interesting hot topic. But I didn't realize that the most of the applications are actually much, much bigger than a nanoscience. I only later realized that, but then it was too late to do anything. But it, anyway, it's interesting. But you really can do use it as a material science or this kind of thing and molecular spectroscopy at the end of the day.
So the deal with the device, I can tell already that you need in mid infrared. Why we just don't buy it? Because you need for each frequency comb, you get only 150 wave numbers, 100 wave numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And each of these combs cost €10,000. So you have to buy for each spectral range a new comb, and they don't have it all.
Mm-hmm.
And if I would buy it for myself, the device in my group, I could buy only one, but then UC comes and somebody else comes with another science and they want to some other frequency. And sorry, you have to go and buy your phone. So what's the thing? It's a funny device. It's really promising, actually. But it was also actually really interesting to hear about this atomic culture and so on and so on.
Yeah.
More questions, comments? All right, let's go on.
Thank you.